مدنی مذاکرات مدنی مذاکرات مدنی مذاکرات
الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على خاتم النبيين أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الصلاة والسلام عليك يا رسول الله وعلى آلك وأصحابك يا حبيب الله الصلاة والسلام عليك يا نبي الله وعلى آلك وأصحابك يا نور الله Saying of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, He who sends salat upon me once, Allah, Almighty sends 10 mercies upon him, and he who recites 100 salat upon me, Allah Almighty showers 100 mercies upon him, and he who recites salat upon me 100 times, Allah Almighty writes between both his eyes, that this person is free from hypocrisy and fire of hell. And on the Day of Judgment, He will keep him amongst the martyrs. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad. Please ask questions. It's not necessary that I'm able to reply to every question, and that too correctly. If possible, I will try to reply to them. Rectify me straight away if you find me making mistake. You won't find me beating around the bush or sticking to my opinion. Unnecessarily, rather you will find me correcting myself whilst thanking you. Insha'Allahul Kareem. صلوا على الحبيب صلى الله على محمد
If the parents of a person pass away, can he or she offer nafil salah or perform a sunnah on their behalf in order to convey them reward?
Yes, offering salatul walidain is mustahab, it's preferable. One should offer 2 rak'ah salah to convey them reward. It's great if a person does it every day. It's an act of reward. Fard salah, fard fasts, every act of worship upon which reward is gained can be used to convey reward to a person. It is not a condition to perform any new act and then convey its reward. Any act can be performed and its reward can then be conveyed. We have 5 times obligatory prayers, even their reward can be conveyed. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in the court of the Amir of Ahl-Sunnah is, how do we acquire true love for the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? I further request you to pray for the forgiveness of my parents.
For this purpose, one needs to study books, make dua to Allah, adopt the company of the devotees of the Prophet. As you know, it is famously said that a person is greatly influenced by the company he adopts. If you stay in the company of the devotees of the Prophet, then inshallah, love for the Prophet will eventually develop. And Muslims actually do. Which Muslim is there who wouldn't love Allah and His Messenger? However, it consists of different levels. So it will keep increasing. Insha'Allahul Kareem. Imam Ahmad Raza Khan Rahimahullah says, listen to Nasheed from a Nasheed reciter who has a melodious voice. This would also increase the love of the Prophet. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
A question to the Amir of Ahl Sunnah is, what is the meaning of Durre Yateem?
Durre Yateem means a unique pearl. A pearl that is one of its kind. In relation to Durre Yateem, you will find in the commentary of Quran, Nurul Irfan, under verse number 2 of Surah An-Nisa, Juz 4, Durre Yateem refers to that pearl that is found on its own, alone, in its shell. So such very pearl is referred to as Durre Yateem. And the pearl Durre Yateem is very precious. So remember that referring to the Prophet as Durre Yateem in the couplet of the Nasheed is absolutely fine. And calling the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam yateem, i.e. orphan, is haram. The scholars are strictly forbidden from using the term yateem for the Prophet. We cannot call him yateem or miskeen or faqir. However, if the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam uses an expression of humility for himself, then this is his humbleness and grandeur. We cannot use those expressions for him. For example, your teacher of Islamic studies says that I am very sinful. Then would you say to him that, oh sinner, listen to me carefully. Well, he's my teacher. He can't lie and he's saying for himself that I'm a sinner. So do you think I'm lying? I just called him a sinner. He is a grave sinner. He says it himself. That's not right. Mufti Ahmad Yar Khan Naimi rahimahullah says that for someone to say something against reality out of humility is also worship. Therefore, if someone uses an expression of humility for himself, we cannot use the same to refer to him. Otherwise, the scholars and refer to themselves as faqir, insignificant, sinner, etc. But we cannot refer to them with these expressions. Sallu ala al-habib, sallallahu ala Muhammad.
There is a psychology theory that is known as cognitive dissonance. In simple terms, we can refer to it as a contrast between the knowledge and practicality of a person. When a person does something against his own ideology, then this contrast leads to mental unease and mental anxiety. Now, there are only two ways to remove this mental predicament that a person suffers. Either his action should be in accordance to his ideology, or ideology should be in accordance to the action. Many perspectives stem from this theory, but the perspective that I especially want to touch upon is the impact of contrast between sayings and actions of parents onto their children. Let's take an example here. For example, parents tell their children not to become angry and furious. But it is seen that upon smallest of the mistake of the child, parents themselves become angry and furiously tell them off. In the same way, parents in the families in which Islamic culture is followed encourage their children to follow Islamic values. But at many occasions, they themselves fall behind in acting upon them in front of their children. When innocent children observe a contrast between the sayings and actions of their own parents, this leads to a severe mental unease for them. Due to this contrast between the sayings and the actions of the parents, so many children unconsciously develop the feelings of hatred for their parents in their hearts. And the parents do not even realize this ever so important issue. And then later, parents are seen crying, complaining that our children do not listen to us. I request in the court of the Amir of Ahlus Sunnah to please bless parents and children with pills of wisdom and advice, so that a relationship of unbound love can be developed between parents and children.
How amazing. You mentioned it beautifully. MashaAllah. There, an account of a noble elder, which I don't know whether true or assumption-based, to teach a lesson. So there was a woman who brought her child to that noble and pious elder and requested him that please explain him as he eats so much jaggery. And he said to her that come back tomorrow. So the woman followed as he said. Now the next day, the pious man said that, son, do not eat too much jaggery. That's all what he said. Now the mother surprisingly asked, if this was all, you could have said this yesterday as well. Upon which the pious man replied that I had eaten jaggery yesterday. So how could I tell him not to eat it? There's no contrast in the states of pious people. There's no harm if someone tells another person not to eat jaggery if he himself eats it. But this could also be an assumption-based tale. But you're right regarding parents. You will see cases where father himself smokes, but tells off his son not to smoke a cigarette. Then the child may do so secretly, thinking that this must be something really good, but why doesn't my dad let me smoke when he smokes himself? Another beautiful example was given in the clip earlier, that parents tell their children off on smallest of the matters, and themselves say they do not be angry, and they themselves lose their temper completely on smallest of the matters. So definitely such behavior of the parents will have a negative impact on the children, and its solution is also very difficult. As at times, in order to teach manners, parents do need to be a bit strict with their children. But in this case as well, parents need to adopt moderation. Frequently shouting at children will make them stubborn, which is a psychological effect of this very action. If you shout at the child again and again, even if you're doing so rightly, he'll become stubborn. So, shout at the child rarely, but such that he remembers for a long time. Similarly, the parents themselves do not act upon an action, but instruct their children to perform them. Like they tell their children that do not lie, speak the truth. But they themselves lie even in front of their children, and at many occasions also get caught red-handed. So in this case, how would the reformation of children take place? Remember this principle that it will be your character that will leave an impact on your children. Your speech, your words, what you say will only be effective if your actions coincide with what you say to your children. What you say should be true, and your action should be true as well. There should be no contradiction between your words and actions, which will lead to child's development. Otherwise not, and this is what's happening nowadays. This very approach, unfortunately, leads to quite unpleasant results, where children from a small age develop negativity about their parents in their hearts, which gradually then becomes firm over time, which then turns into something big. And when the child grows up, it stays in his mind that my parents' words and actions are different. All of those who are listening to me, if you ponder upon yourself, then you would realize that you still remember some childhood things. The things that specially leave a mark on a person's heart, he tends to remember them more. Now, if those things are negative, then they will be harmful. And if they are positive, then they will be beneficial. May Allah Almighty allow us to bring our children up properly and in the light of the pristine Sharia. And now, as for those children who have grown up, they have become baligh, they have become adult, and if they have any negativity in their minds regarding their parents, like the parents told you for no reason, or they were strict to you and this is instilled in your minds, or any such thing that took place, then keep a big heart and clean your hearts and forgive them for once and all. As if someone was subject to oppression whilst he was a non-baligh, then he can forgive for it after becoming baligh, which you should. And make sure that you do not take any revenge from them, considering it a privilege for yourself and an honor. You should only serve them and nothing else. You should do it. If they need financial help, then make sure that you help them financially, and do so wholeheartedly and sincerely. Serve them, look after them, they are your parents. If the parents said to you anything during your childhood, or even after you grew up, which often happens, parents do become a bit impatient, they tell of grown-ups too. You should forgive them. Be loyal to them yourself. Don't consider your parents to be disloyal. At times this happens due to the old age. Even in the Holy Quran, we have been advised in relation to this matter, where it says in the Holy Quran that when your parents or any one of them reach an old age, then do not scold them or even say oof to them. Oof is an expression of very small thing. Oof. So, even this should be avoided. But children reply back harshly to their parents. They give their parents dirty looks. Some of them treat their parents very rudely. They talk to them rudely as well. Dad, how many times shall I tell you? You don't know. Dad, the man has reached the moon and you're still talking about these old and outdated facts. We know it better. We're educated. What education do you have? This tone is not of a fortunate son. A fortunate and privileged son doesn't talk in this manner. Your father held your finger and taught you how to walk. Your parents looked after you and fulfilled your needs when you couldn't even speak and utter words properly, and they used to teach you. Today they have become old and you think they have no wisdom or intellect. It is not the case. One should not say this at all. A privileged son is he who observes patience even if there is any harm from them, and he should wholeheartedly serve them for the sake of Allah Almighty. Through this he will inshallah be admitted into paradise. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in the court of my honorable sheikh is that an imam or the salah offering person is to keep his trouser or lower garment above his ankles. Now let's suppose that a person's trouser or lower garment dangles below the ankles and he offers salah in the very same state. In this case, what is the ruling of Sharia regarding his salah? I humbly request you to make dua in my favor.
Now the questioner has asked a question regarding the Sharia implication on a salah that is offered whilst keeping the lower ends of the lower garment dangling below the ankles. In this relation, let's first of all determine which body part is referred to as ankles. If you look down towards your feet and then look slightly above the feet on the sides, you will see a sort of emerged bone. This is called ankle. So having the lower garment above the ankles is sunnah. Now during salah, if one's lower garment is left dangling below the ankles out of arrogance, then the salah will become makruh tahrimi, which is closer to haram. And if it's not due to arrogance, then this ruling will not be applied. and we can't develop any opinion regarding anyone saying that he has done so out of arrogance. It may be negligence or laziness, or he may feel shy of people in doing so. Nowadays, you will see 99% people having it below their ankles. I didn't say 100% just to be on the safe side, otherwise it may be 100%. You will see them above ankles for those who are practically religious or of practicing scholars. That's it really. Even for the preachers, you would see that not all of them adhere to this. Only a handful of them do so. Even if they wear a long gown, that too falls below their ankles. Same ruling applies here. It should be above the ankles. An excuse in this is that we bought it ready-made. Well, if the front of the ready-made clothes is sewed at the back, then would you still wear it? You'll get it fixed, won't you? In the same way, fix the length too. You can shorten the length from the bottom and bring it above the ankles. Now, let's talk about the scenario in which it is hanging below the ankles, but not out of arrogance, but due to laziness or something. In this case, the salah will become makruh tanzihi, meaning disliked. It's better to avoid it. However, there's no sin for this. Now, some people, they fold their trousers in order to offer salah. They're seen folding the lower ends of their trousers, and some are seen folding their trousers even from the side of their waist. Some people fold only one end and some people fold both ends. A hadith forbids this practice during salah. It is called kafi thawb, meaning returning of clothes, and it is makruh tahrimi to do so in salah. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in the court of my honorable sheikh is that if a person joins the imam in qada during salah and he knows that the imam will complete the qada very soon, now is it necessary for him to recite the attahiyat or not? Please provide shari'i guidance in this matter.
The person joins the imam in the qada and the imam stands up after completing the first qada. But it is wajib for the person to recite the complete attahiyat till the end. After completing it, he may stand up. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
I work in food industry. My question is that if, let's say, food gets burnt and wasted by a professional cook, or it's partially left uncooked, then would the chef have to expiate for it?
So in the case where a chef spoils food, like burns it or leaves it partially uncooked, so the amount of the food that was spoiled by the chef, the total loss that was incurred due to him, he will need to expiate for the loss of the food that was incurred due to him. If the actual owner forgives him for the loss, then it's fine. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in the court of the Amir of Ahl Sunnah is, we know that the prophets and angels are infallible, i.e. sinless. Now let's say someone considers someone else, a human being or some other creation, to be infallible in the same way as them. What is the ruling on having such a belief? Please guide us in this regard.
It's misguidance. The term used for this in Urdu is ma'soom, which people also at times refer to children as, but not in the same capacity or meaning. It means someone who doesn't have any power to commit sin. The prophets and the angels cannot commit a sin at all. Except the prophets and angels, no other creation shares the same honor. So this is a shari'i term. When people call children masoom, they don't mean the same meaning. At times they even call the elders masoom, right? So it should be avoided. They don't say it in the meaning of the shari'i term, but however, it should still be avoided. Don't say that. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
One question has been asked that if someone is privileged to have the blessed hair of the Prophet at home, then how can he ensure to observe respect and honor for it?
Generally, they are respectfully placed in a separate room or area. There's no harm in it. At times, the same room also has an attached bath, which is also perhaps the case with us as well. But we have never used that bathroom. It's totally sealed. We make sure not to use it at all. These are etiquette and manners, and also who would want to use that bathroom? Rather, it would be great if one could enter that room in the state of wudu. When possible, one may offer salah there, or one can also intend for that area to be Masjid-e-Bait, in which the family members should offer their salah. It would be a great honor for the blessed here to be present there. You may recite salat upon the Prophet there or Naat over there. So such kind of pious deeds should be performed over there. Avoid talking about worldly matters, joking, messing around and laughing out loud there. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
Masjid A has many channels to collect charity but not many areas to spend in. Now there's Masjid B that has many areas to spend money in but not many channels to collect charity. Now can the management of Masjid A use their funds for the expenses of Masjid B?
No, they cannot. Funds can only be used in the masjid for which they were actually collected. What they can do is not collect donations at all. Refuse it. And they can say to the donors that give it in such and such masjid. Or if they do donate to you, then tell them that you will send their donation in that masjid. Then it's fine. But collections of Masjid A can't be used for Masjid B. It can't be used for any other masjid or a madrasa or even help the poor through those funds. There are certain masjids that have a lot of reserves and funds. However, the Shari'i ruling is that the funds of one masjid cannot be used for the other. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
Brother Jaufan has asked a question through social media that, what are the benefits of placing Ahadnama in one's grave?
Placing the Shajara or Ahadnama in the grave is permissible, and the better approach is to place them in a niche by digging it in the wall that is in front of the deceased's face and towards the Qibla. In fact, in Durr-e Mukhtar, writing the Ahadnama on the shroud has been declared as permissible, and it further states that there's hope of forgiveness through it. And writing Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim on the chest and the forehead of the deceased is permissible. And one person had made a will for this. So after his passing, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim was written on his chest and forehead. Then someone saw him in a dream and asked about him. He replied that when I was placed inside my grave, angels of punishment arrived. And when the angels saw Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim written on my forehead, they announced that you have been saved from punishment. What one can also do is that write Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim on the forehead and the first kalima on the chest, which is La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah sallallahu ta'ala alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Now in relation to the method of writing it, you don't need to use any ink whatsoever. Take your index finger without having anything on it and just write with it. Although you won't be able to see anything, but it will be written down. There's no need to put any Dhamma, Kathra or Fatha either. Nonetheless, as for the Ahadnama that will be placed inside the grave, that can be in the format where it was written using a pen. But that which is written correctly, letters openings need to be opened properly. It is more beneficial if a person who has permission for it writes it himself with a pen. But it is more common in print version nowadays. It's not easy to write such lengthy text. If the grave digger does not dig a niche inside the deceased's grave, which sometimes also happens, in this case the sacred relics can also be placed on top of the shroud. Sallu ala al-Habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in the court of the Amir of Al-Sunnah is that, at times it is seen that people come to offer salah and after arriving in the masjid they start sorting their clothes out like their trousers, shirt, etc. to the extent that even sometimes they miss one rak'ah. So is this practice permissible?
If he was bringing the sleeve down that was more than halfway above the wrist and he is struggling to bring it down and sort it out, if rak'ah is missed due to this reason, then there is no problem, as it is wajib to do so. During salah, if the sleeve is folded more than halfway above the wrist, then the salah becomes makruh tahrimi. So, if the rak'ah was missed due to something that was wajib, then it's fine. Otherwise, if you adjust your cap, your clothes, your size, your hair for no reason, and then you miss a rak'ah, then that's not good. We should rush into catching the rak'ah. I have even been informed that some people stand in front of the mirror after wudu and comb their hair, and even end up missing the whole congregational salah. They have no regard for this. Don't do this. Come earlier and perform wudu or do wuzu at home, which has more excellence. So allow enough time for yourself to duly get ready to arrive in time for congregational salah. صلوا على الحبيب صلى الله على محمد.
My question in your court is regarding the current day hair and beard styles which people keep. Please answer in detail regarding it.
Well, as for beard styles, people nowadays keep it short. They trim it, shorten it, and keep different kinds of designs. Now remember that a fistful length is the size of how much a beard should be. Now if someone's beard doesn't grow that much, then there's no blame on him. If it does grow in length, and now the person shaves it off or trims it, and shortens it under a fistful length, this is haram. Now there are various Shari'i rulings within beard. We need to abide by them all. Some people shave it very deep from the side of the cheeks, and some people are seen shaving the hair that are around and under the lips. This is not permissible as it is the part of the beard. The only exemption in this is that, let's say if a few hair of the beard come in the water or the food as a person consumes it, then only those few hair can be shaved off. In fact, nowadays, it is very common where people shave off hair from below their lips. This is impermissible. It's necessary to avoid it. Now towards the upper side, some beard hair grow on the cheeks as well. Now, at times just above the cheeks are excess hair. If these excess hair grow long, then they look quite unpleasant. So those hair can be removed off. In fact, they should be shaved. Now, as for these normal hair, they are part of the beard. They go right deep into it while shaving. This should be avoided. Now let's talk about the hairstyle. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam kept hair to halfway to his blessed ears, and also to full ears, and also kept it to the length where his blessed hair would touch his blessed shoulders. He never kept it to a length where hair would fall below the shoulders. And in order to come out of the state of ihram, he alayhi salatu wasalam performed the halq of his blessed head, which we would say for ourselves that we shaved off all the hair of our head. So the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam performed the halq. So other than only this very occasion, he alayhi salatu wasalam always kept full hair in the lengths I mentioned before. Now even those who do keep sunnah compliant hair, either they don't know the Shari'i ruling regarding it, or there may be another reason why they keep it. They cut them from these edges. They don't take it back like this. You see these sides, where this bone is, right above it is where head starts from. So these hair here belong to the head. So it's not right to cut these hair. All of these hair over here will go behind your head once you don't shorten them and let them grow in a sunnah compliant manner. Otherwise this hairstyle will not be according to sunnah. What I mentioned is what I understood of sunnah hairstyle. The trend of keeping sunnah hairstyle in our society is almost non-existent. Some people do keep long hair, but they would have a very small beard, and from their get-up and clothing you come to know that he hasn't kept sunnah way of hair, and it's possible that he may also have a ponytail. And when they come to the masjid, they open up their hair out of respect. Now the ponytail that men make, remember that it is also haram as it is imitating women. Ponytail should also be avoided. Keep hair according to sunnah. If you have the intention of following the sunnah, then inshallah you will be rewarded too. So be mindful of it. If such a brother who has a ponytail etc. comes to the masjid, then do not tell him off in case he stops coming to the masjid. Otherwise he may stop offering salah as well. Elderly people normally tell them off. Be kind to them and bring them to the masjid. Don't create an atmosphere of dispute. Neither be so strict that people develop hatred for religious people and stay away from them. Don't be forceful to anyone for them to keep a sunnah compliant beard before he starts avoiding you. Try to explain them according to the situation with kindness, compassion and softness. Don't be so much on top of him that he starts completely avoiding you, and on top of that he also stops visiting the masjid, or he may change the masjid or his path. So be mindful of this. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in your court is regarding denture implants. There are two types of it. One is in which the tooth can be taken out and then replaced, while the other type is where it is permanently affixed and it cannot be taken out. In this case, would our wudu and ghusl be valid?
The tooth that can come out needs to be taken out. Take it out, rinse your mouth in wudu, and sunnah will be fulfilled. And if it is matter of ghusl, then taking it out will become fard, as making water regenerate is fard. So if it's not possible without removing it, then removing it will become fard. Otherwise water will not reach there. Now these temporary teeth can be taken out, and it's exempt if it's permanently fixed. Wudu and ghusl will be valid. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
My question in your court is that if someone smokes a cigarette after performing wudu, would his wudu still remain valid or not?
Smoking cigarette does not invalidate wudu. Nonetheless, if the smell of tobacco is emanating from the mouth then entering, the masjid would be haram. In fact, even if someone offers salah at home, there shouldn't be any smell in their mouth and breath. Prohibition of entering a masjid with a smelly breath is not only specific to salah. Entering a masjid with smell is categorically forbidden whether it is for salah or not. Angels also get troubled because of smell. Sallu ala al-habib sallallahu ala Muhammad.
Madani muzakara. Madani muzakara.